then ruined it by saying, "But not really."
"Lord Bacchus must hear of this,"
she muttered, and then she turned and sprinted inhumanly fast toward the club. She didn't go back in, but ducked up an alley on the side of the building. "Oh, bugger," I breathed. There was nothing I could do. No roots to tie her up with in a parking lot. No earth to hold her fast. And I couldn't hope to match her speed, pumped up with power as she was right now and as depleted as I was. I spat thickly on the sidewalk, delivering my self-evaluation for the evening. I'd managed to make a bollocks out of the whole situation. Most of the Bacchans were dead, true, but the one who got away would bring more, and perhaps Bacchus himself to get revenge. Two cops were dead, as were at least two civilians I'd seen outside, and who knew how many more in the club. This would be major news. It might even go national. Melina was going to be pissed, and she had every right to be. Fights in the paranormal community were not supposed to be seen by the general public. If this did go national, anyone who knew how things really worked would read between the lines and see that the East Valley was dangerously unstable. Police cars and fire trucks screeched to a halt nearby, and one of them blocked the exit from the parking lot, corralling the last few witnesses. I wouldn't have time to conduct my own investigation inside the club. All I could do was remove my fingerprints from the bats by unbinding the oils, go home, and recuperate. I jogged wearily south, leaving the carnage behind, and got rained on again when I reached Shea Boulevard. There was a commercial center there on the southeast corner, and I called a taxi from Oregano's Pizza Bistro to take me home. The driver looked doubtfully at my sword and the cuffs on my wrists, but I paid him cash up front, so he didn't say anything. Just to be safe in case the police questioned him later, I had him drop me off near Starbucks on Mill Avenue, then cast camouflage again and jogged the rest of the way home in the rain. I left Fragoraw on my bedroom dresser after drying it off and dissolving the bond to my body. I bound it to the dresser instead. I had a whole lot of mending to do overnight, whether it was raining or not, so I shucked off my clothes and stretched myself out in the backyard to heal properly, tattoos in touch with the earth, with a sheet of oilskin thrown over me as a makeshift shelter. I contacted the Iron Elemental, who lurked around my shop, to come eat away the cuffs on my wrists, and after the rain finally quit, my mind found rest on Leth's shore. Chapter 13. I confess to feeling a sense of entitlement at times. After living for so long, after earning my senior citizen's discount many times over, I feel I should be able to wake up in peace and enjoy a few simple pleasures. Oberon's tail thumping a greeting, for example. Sunlight in the kitchen as I make coffee. Some classical guitar playing softly as I whip up an omelet and some sausages. And when I have to wake up from spending a cold night on the wet earth, a hot shower would be lovely. If the day wants to turn to shit after that, then that's all right, but give me a few minutes' harmony at the outset so I can remember what it was like to be at peace. When my eyes blink open at the dawn, don't greet me with a giant bloody crow that's forever branded in my cultural memory as a harbinger of death.
"Caw!"
It barked at me, right in my face, and I startled backward and probably made an undignified squealing noise as I rolled away frantically from that sharp beak, leaving the oilskin behind, getting cold dew and wet grass all over me. The crow threw back its head and laughed at me. Not avian laughter, but human laughter, a throaty contralto coming out of a bloody bird's throat.
"Whose golden stones, druid?"
the crow said.
"Have you been lying here all this time? I left you here weeks ago, and it's like nothing's changed."
"Good morning, Morrigan," I said sourly as I heaved myself up off the ground and brushed some grass off my torso. Before it got any worse, I ameliorated my tone. "And no, I haven't been lying here all this time. It's just that yesterday was particularly taxing. If you'll give me a few moments to clean up, I'll be able to receive you properly."
Of course. Take your time, Sheehan,
she said, calling me by my original Irish name. She flapped noisily over to my patio table, where rested a small black leather pouch closed with a drawstring of rawhide. She probably wanted me to ask her about it, but I wasn't going to start talking until I'd cleaned up. I strode right past it as if it weren't there.
Atticus, did I hear you talking to someone?
Oberon asked sleepily from the couch as I came in through the back door. Yeah, that giant crow in the backyard, I replied, waving my hand at the window. Don't mess with it, that's the Morrigan.
Oh, I think I'll stay inside.
Good call. I shook my head and sighed as I turned on the shower, waiting a minute for the water to heat up. If the Morrigan had come to warn me about another one of her auguries, I'd have a hard time containing my scorn. But perhaps she'd come to tell me where she'd been for the last 3 weeks. Or maybe she was ready to work on her own version of my protective amulet, and the bag contained her cold iron. The Morrigan slid into the bathroom in her human form just as I was about to step into the shower. She was naked and beautiful, and her eyes were half-lidded with desire, and I thought, oh, crap. After I killed Angus Ogg, the Morrigan had graphically communicated that the entire episode had turned her on, and she promised to take me soon. People like her from the Bronze Age weren't shy about sex and never felt they had to pretend they didn't want it. As a child of the Iron Age, I was only marginally less wanton, if at all, but the Morrigan, for all her beauty, wasn't my top choice of bedmates. She might look like a fantasy pinup now, but when in her crow form, she ate dead people. And that made me throw up a little bit when I thought about it. I'd been hoping she'd forgotten all about her declaration of desire, but apparently she was determined to make a conquest of me. It's difficult to say no to the Morrigan when she really wants something. Next to impossible, really. And it's never a good idea to offend a chooser of the slain. The politic thing to do, the safe thing to do, would be to give her what she wanted and try to enjoy it. And once the Morrigan decided she wanted to seduce a lad, she could turn on all the wiles of a succubus without that bothersome business of being damned in the bargain. I confess to not putting up much of a fight. I think I might have said, hey. The Morrigan is not a creature to take you down slow and easy, though. Over the next few hours, I think I had one moment where I wasn't at least partially in pain. It was the first kiss, soft and tender and delicious to the point where I thought I might enjoy this after all. But then her nails were scratching me, I got slapped a few times, there was a whole lot more biting than I've ever endured, and I lost a handful of hair at one point. And if I wasn't doing what I was supposed to, like the several times when my phone rang and I wanted to answer it, thinking it was Granuaile calling to ask why I hadn't shown up for work, her eyes glowed red, and she spoke like Sigourney Weaver telling Bill Murray, "There is no Dana, only Zul." There's just no arguing with that tone of voice. In other words, I was fucking scared. And that's the way the Morrigan liked it. In the last hour, she began to speak in a tongue older than I was. I think it was Proto-Celtic, a couple of vowel shifts and aspirated consonants away from anything I recognized. And since she didn't seem to expect me to respond, I let her babble away. It sounded ritualistic, and it gradually dawned on me that we were performing sex magic of some kind, though I had no idea what she was trying to accomplish. She eventually declared herself satisfied and gave me permission to stop. We'd long since moved to the bedroom, and I collapsed, gasping, onto the sheets. There really isn't any post-coital afterglow to speak of after that kind of sex. There's just a sense of relief that you survived without disfigurement, plus a dire need for Gatorade.
Oh,
I whispered.
You're welcome,
the Morrigan chuckled. For the pain?
No, for the ear.
What?
I reached up my hand to where my cartilage niblets had been, and pinched my fingers around something there that felt remarkably ear-shaped. Is this real?
Of course it is.
Is that what you were doing with that chanting and, stuff?
Yes.
I was overwhelmed with gratitude. Regenerating my demon-chewed ear had proven to be far beyond my abilities, and now I felt whole again. Morgan, thank you so much. That was so nice of you. The breath woofed out of me as the Morrigan's fist slammed down onto my stomach and pushed up on my diaphragm.
What did you just say to me?
She grabbed my jaw and yanked it to face her, so that I saw her eyes glowing red as I fought to recover my breath.
Curse your meddling,
I managed to wheeze.
That's better,
she said, and released me. I guess there would be no cuddling session.
Atticus, are you maybe finished now? I'm really hungry.
Oh, Oberon, I'm so sorry. She wouldn't let me go.
It's all right. Are you okay? Because it sounded like she was pulling out your short and curlies in there.
Yeah, I bet you never had a French poodle treat you like that. I turned to the Morrigan and remembered my duties as host. May I offer you any refreshment? I asked. Perhaps a meal within the compass of my limited pantry?
I will accept whatever you see fit to offer me, she said.
Statements like that cannot be taken at face value. It sounded like she'd be happy with a sardine sitting on a Ritz, but in truth, if I offered her anything but the very best in my house, I'd be insulting her. I tiptoed gingerly out of bed, bruised and bleeding and stinging where sweat had trickled into the wounds. Everything hurt because I was completely drained of power. I'd have to go back outside and draw some strength from the earth to begin healing, and I felt as if all I did anymore was spend my time fixing up my damaged body.
Holy catfight, Atticus! She scratched you up pretty good,
Oberon said when I emerged from the bedroom. Yeah, it was a festival of pain. Let me close up these cuts and I'll start in on our very late breakfast. Since I'd completely missed the morning routine I'd been looking forward to upon waking up, I decided I'd have it anyway, even though it was afternoon. I put on a pot of coffee and then spent a few moments in the backyard, soothing my screaming skin. Feeling marginally better, I returned inside and played the latest release from Rodrigo y Gabriela on the stereo while I cooked an enormous breakfast. 3 egg omelets with cheese, diced ham and chives, a couple of packages of maple-flavored sausages, mostly for Oberon, skillet potatoes mixed with chopped white onions and red bell peppers, and toast with butter and orange marmalade. The Morrigan emerged from the bedroom as I was plating everything. She was freshly scrubbed and groomed and nude, and she sat down at my kitchen table without a shred of self-consciousness. I didn't have a stitch on either, and I felt pleased to have a small time where I could behave like a Celt again, without worrying about the social customs of Americans. The Morrigan was making an extraordinary effort to be affable as I served her. I think she tried to smile politely as I gave her a cup of coffee. She took it black, but it was a dismal failure, and I pretended not to notice. Oberon, for his part, was eating his sausages as quietly as he could, casting nervous glances at the Morrigan to make sure she wasn't coming after him with those fingernails. She paid me compliments on the food and drank 5 cups of coffee to my 1, in addition to a glass of orange juice and a taller glass of water. She also asked for a 2nd omelet and 2 more slices of toast.
Where is she putting it all?
Oberon asked as he watched her shovel it down. I don't know. Go ahead and ask her if you like.
No thanks. I want to live.
Once she finally proclaimed herself full and dispensed with another round of obligatory thanks, The niceties of custom had been observed, and she could proceed to business.
"Have you wondered where I've been the past few weeks?"
she asked. "Yes, the thought has crossed my mind."
"I've been occupied with a civil war in Tir na n'Og. The battles have been glorious."
"What? Who was fighting whom?"
"Angus Og's partisans decided to rise up against Briat and myself, despite the fact that their leader had fallen and failed to follow through on his promises. After the first wave broke, a purge was necessary, and that took the majority of the time."
"Did any of the Tuatha De Danann fall?" The Morgan shook her head.
"They were all lesser fae to one degree or another, but they had some impressive weapons bequeathed to them by Angus Og. Briat's new armor got a strenuous test."
"Briat took up arms herself?" The Tuatha De Danann are loath to put themselves in mortal peril when they can get someone else to die for them. The Morgan nodded.
"Aye, and I am forced to admit she acquitted herself well. She is as fearsome a foe as she ever was."
"So it's all over now?" The Morgan shrugged.
"The fighting is over, so it is as far as I'm concerned. I'm sure there's something political going on, but that holds no allure for me. What does hold allure for me,"
she narrowed her gaze and pointed at my amulet,
"is that fascinating necklace of yours. We have a deal, you and I, and it is time you began to fulfill your end of it."
"Our deal was simple. I teach her how to make her own version of my necklace, which protected me from most magic by suffusing my very aura with cold iron, and she'd never, ever take my life. It wouldn't save me from accidental injury or the effects of old age, but it sure was nice to know I couldn't end violently without the Morgan breaking her word. I'm perfectly happy to do so. Did you bring any cold iron?"
"Yes, a moment,"
she replied, and got up to fetch the leather bag I'd seen earlier on my patio table. I cleared away the dishes and told Oberon he was the best hound a druid could ever want. "You were extraordinarily patient this morning, and I appreciate it," I told him.
"Yeah, well, she scares the bejesus out of me, so it's not hard to sit around and cower when she's in the house."
"I understand completely. I'll try to send her away as soon as I can."
"Thanks, Atticus. I think I'll go take a nap in the bedroom. Stay out of your way."
I gave his head a couple of scratches as he padded by, and then the Morrigan returned. She loosed the drawstring on the bag and upended it on the table, spilling out several chunks of cold iron meteorites of varying sizes and purity. None was larger than the size of my palm.
"Which one should I use?" she asked.
I sat down and picked up each one, examining them carefully. "Well, as the wee green puppet once said, size matters not," I replied, "at least as a raw meteorite. You want the purest amulet possible without sacrificing strength. Totally pure iron is actually weaker than aluminum, so you have to alloy it with something to give you some kind of steel. These here look like they're mixed with iridium instead of nickel, so you're in good shape. You can simply melt them down and cast them into whatever mold you like."
"Melt them down? I beg your pardon, Druid, but doesn't the amulet need to be cold forged?"
"No, that's a myth of the mortals. The power of cold iron isn't the temperature you use in forging it. A better term would be sky iron, because the power is in its alien origin."
"Ah, I see," the Morgan said. "If it has no bond to this earth, it will repel or destroy magic better than iron born of Gaia."
"Exactly," I agreed. "Now, my amulet weighs 60 grams, I said as I flicked it. "And that's after I punched a hole through it to string it on my necklace."
"Is the necklace silver or white gold?"
"Mine is silver, but you can use whatever you'd like."
"Will the amulet be more powerful if I make it weigh more than 60 grams?
"Yes, it grants you more protection, but it also precludes you from casting your own spells. To my mind, that's a severe drawback. You have to find a weight that strikes a perfect balance between protection and magical flow, and for me, it's 60 grams. I don't know if that's a universal constant. Perhaps a different weight would work best for you. But I arrived at that size after much trial and error.
I can have Gufnu make an amulet for me, she said.
He was not only a brewer of magical drafts, but also the most accomplished smith of the Tuatha De Danann, after Briat herself. Good idea, I nodded. Have him make as many as he can from the material you have here. At a guess, I think you have enough to make two at least, perhaps as many as four. I'd like to have one for my apprentice, if you don't mind.
Not at all. I think it is good you are training druids again. You should train more than one, Shiyahan. The world could use a strong grove.
That was suspiciously close to a compliment for the Morrigan. She had even spoken kindly. I figured it would be dangerous to point it out, however, so I said briskly, "Thank you. If suitable candidates present themselves, I will consider it." The Morrigan pivoted quickly back to business.
Let us say that I have returned from Gufnu with a cold iron amulet weighing 60 grams and a chain of silver rope. What happens next?
Next, you have to bind the cold iron to your aura, unless you'd rather just use it as a talisman.
Ah, I already know how to make those. They are only good against direct external threats, and they do nothing to your aura.
Right. So, look at my aura. Where do you see the iron? The Morrigan narrowed her eyes and directed her gaze slightly above my head.
It appears like filings inside the white interference of your magic. Specks of cookies in the cream.
What? I had no idea you liked ice cream. The Morrigan's eyes flashed red.
If you tell anyone, I'll rip off your nose.
Okay, back to the aura then. Those iron specks are actually tiny knots. I have bound the iron to my aura all over so that when a spell targets me or locates me via oral signature, it runs into iron right away and fizzles out. You have to be scrupulous about making a good scatter pattern so there aren't any holes in your coverage for a spell to get through, and be so thorough that whole-body hexes cannot distinguish you from the iron. That saved my life just 2 days ago.
What happened?
Some German witches slapped an infernal hex on me. When it works, you simply go up in flames. But since the iron bindings in my aura are aliases, then...
Stop! What do you mean by aliases?
I grimaced at my own foolishness. I apologize, Morrigan. I forgot that you are unfamiliar with computer jargon. An alias is nothing more than a tiny file that points to another larger file. It's a proxy, because it only represents the real thing rather than being the thing itself. I cannot very well walk about with an actual cloud of iron filings around me, can I? But magical proxies that point to a real cold iron amulet are easy to live with.
Ingenious.
Thank you. When this hex hit me, instead of my body burning, the iron proxies bound to my aura directed the entire thing to my amulet. I tapped it a couple of times for emphasis. It heated up so quickly that it burned my skin. I would have been bacon without it, and in fact, the same hex turned a local witch into cinders.
Remarkable,
she said.
This happened 2 days ago, you say?
Yes, that's right.
I received absolutely no premonition of your impending death at that time.
She shook her head slowly in fascination.
You were completely protected.
I wondered if she thought I was completely protected against the Bakkens last night. And then I wondered if she would get any premonitions about my fate at all, now that she had agreed never to take me. Well, the burning skin was torturous. It was like watching fifth graders trying to perform Wagnerian opera. The Morrigan waved the point away.
But you have the means to deal with that. You were never in mortal peril. And this protects you from hellfire as well?
Yes, even that which is spewed from a fallen angel.
How do you bind the cold iron to your aura? Doesn't the iron resist your magic?
That's the tricky part for sure. Once I had the idea for this in the 11th century, I spent a couple of decades trying to do it myself, but I couldn't because you're right, the cold iron laughs at all attempts to mess with it. You need the help of an iron elemental. You have to befriend one, basically, because it's a lot of work for them, too. Like I said to you before that business with Angus Oak, the protective process alone took me 3 centuries. The Morrigan cursed in that proto-Celtic language of hers, and her eyes reddened.
I am not a goddess of smiths. I have no talent for iron, nor for making friends.
Perhaps you could view it as an opportunity for personal growth rather than an obstacle. As a goddess of death, making friends wouldn't make sense, I suppose, since you must eventually take them all. But I can walk you through that process, too. It's not difficult.
Yes, it is.
I respectfully disagree. Iron elementals like to eat fairies. I'm sure you can lay hands on a few of those.
Easily,
she agreed, nodding.
They breed like rodents in Tir na n'Og.
Great. Now, when the iron elemental thanks you for the fairies and suggests that you were kind or nice to offer such a tasty snack, do not threaten it with violence in response. Instead, smile and say it's welcome. You might even share that you rather enjoy a bowl of ice cream now and then, and that you imagine fairies must be something like ice cream to them. The Morrigan's face underwent a curious exercise. Her eyebrows knitted together, and her lower lip seemed dangerously close to trembling. But then she scowled, and the scarlet glow of her anger flared again in her eyes. As quickly as it appeared, it faded, and uncertainty crept again into her features. She looked down at the table, her raven hair falling forward to mask her face, and she spoke to me from behind a black curtain.
I can't do this. Making friends is not in my nature. I am a stranger to kindness.
Nonsense! I flicked my gloriously shaped right ear. Here's living proof of your kindness. Irish generosity thrives within you, Morrigan.
But that was sex. I can't have sex with an elemental.
Lucky for the elementals, I thought. That is true, but there are other ways to be kind to people, as I'm sure you're aware. I think the trouble is that you never let people be kind to you in return. Tell you what, I'll get you ready to make friends with an iron elemental. You can practice all the intricacies of friendship with me. I'd be honored to be your friend. The Morrigan rose abruptly from her chair and scooped the iron meteorites back into the leather bag, her face hidden by her hair all the while.
Thank you for the sex and the meal and the instruction,
she said formally.
You have been a most gracious host.
She tied the drawstring tightly around the pouch.
I will visit Gufnu and return when I have the amulets.
Without another word, she bound herself to a crow's form right on my table, snatched the pouch in her talons, and then flew out my back door, which opened by itself to allow her egress. Chapter 14. I spent maybe 30 seconds thinking the Morrigan had left so quickly because she was getting a bit verklempt over my offer of friendship. I should have known better. A polite knock at the door startled me and set Oberon off to barking 3 times before he said,
"It's Briett. She said hello to me."
"Briett is at the door?" A note of panic in my mental voice made my hound laugh, for he knew as well as I that I couldn't answer the door right now. I was still naked and only partially healed from the Morrigan's abuse. And that, I realized, was precisely what the Morrigan wanted. Nothing about the timing of these visits was accidental. Once again, I would have to play catch-up with the designs of these goddesses and try to figure out what their true motives were. A few weeks ago, they had both played me beautifully to achieve their own ends, and now I could see it was starting again. I should have asked the Morrigan more questions about that civil war in Tir na n'Og, for that had something to do with Briett's sudden appearance, sure as a frog's ass is watertight. "Well, I know how to get some answers," I said to the door as I scrambled into my bedroom. Oberon met me there with his tail wagging.
Answers to what?
To all my questions, I said, throwing on a pair of khaki cargo shorts and a green cotton t-shirt. The door thumped again, not as politely as before. There was definitely a note of impatience in the way she knocked on wood. Now look, she can obviously hear your thoughts, so I want you to pipe down and head out to the living room and wait. And when she comes in, I want you to stay behind her at all times.
Why?
Just do it, please, I said shortly, and immediately felt sorry for my arbitrary tone. Usually I enjoy arguing with Oberon. He's great with the give and take, but he didn't understand the stakes here, and I couldn't explain them to him while Briett was listening in on his side of the conversation.
Okay.
Oberon's tail drooped as he left the room, and I deflated a bit too, but if this was going to work, Briett could have no warning. I didn't know if I'd even go through with it, but I had to be prepared. I picked up Fragoroff from my dresser and slung the scabbard across my back, then hurried to answer the front door. Briett smirked at me when I opened the door, and it was like one of those cheesy commercials they play during football games. An obscenely beautiful, sultry woman in next to nothing appears mysteriously. A ghost wind, generated off-camera, blows her hair in a way that suggests wild abandon. She pouts sexily at this utterly regular schmo with a weak chin. And he completely suspends his disbelief that she'd ever be interested in him, because he's got an ice-cold beer in his hand. The mysterious wind in this case was almost certainly generated by Briett herself, and it wafted her scent to me, which was just as I remembered it. Milk and honey and soft ripe berries. Damn. Now, I'm not a regular schmo, and I certainly don't have a weak chin, but I'm as susceptible to beer commercials as the next fella, even though it's just living vicariously in a pubescent male fantasy. None of those commercials came close to the real, live goddess that confronted me in my doorway. Briett looked as if she had jumped out of the pages of Heavy Metal. She was wearing several layers of sheer blue material, tied or bunched in such a way as to barely cover her knotty bits, yet providing a tantalizing glimpse of each through the fabric. A golden torque circled her throat, and another accentuated her left biceps, while delicate ropes of twisted metal adorned her wrists. Around her waist were several thin golden chains. Her red hair cascaded around her face in languorous waves like Jessica Rabbit's, and she had gold thread braided into it here and there. And the pouty come-hither look, achieved by pursing the lips a bit and looking at me with sleepy eyes? She had that down. The ladies in the beer commercials were hot, no doubt, but when a goddess wants to make an effort, no one else can even open the jar of mustard, let alone cut it. Briett was much more my type than the Morrigan. She didn't eat dead people in any of her forms, for one thing, and it was she who ignited the fires of creativity and passion within the hearts of all Irish. But even if I wanted to give Briett whatever she had come for, and I wasn't sure I did, I realized that the Morrigan had done her best to ensure I couldn't. The entire cast of the Morrigan's visit changed for me now that Briett was standing in front of me. The two of them had never been antagonists, but neither had they been fast friends. A healthy respect and perhaps an unhealthy envy existed between them, a rivalry of equals to see who could be first among them all. What had kept each other from the other's throat before was Angus Og and his cabal, but now that there had been a purge in Tiernan Og, perhaps the two of them were clawing at each other, and I was either a prize to be won or a means to a different end. The scratchy sex, the ear, the second omelet. It was all the Morrigan's Machiavellian machinations.
Atticus, you know I can hear you when you're all spazzed up, right? That was a lot of alliteration for a doubtful druid deliberating over a deity's dubious designs.
Welcome, Briett. You've left me speechless, I said over the end of Oberon's mockery. She might wonder what I was thinking.
Atticus,
she purred. I'm not kidding. She purred at me. Briett can not only beat Hank Azaria at producing voices, she can do multiple voices at the same time. She can sing three-part harmony all by herself, in addition to the lead. It comes in handy when she's crooning ballads as the goddess of poetry, and now I saw, or rather felt, how it could be used for other purposes.
"I hope I have not come at an inconvenient time," she said, in voices evocative of rose hips, caramel, and silk.
It made me feel warm inside, but I shivered outwardly, like a tuning fork quivering in hot chocolate. "Not at all. Won't you please come in?" I stepped aside and gestured for her to enter, the Bronze Age host once more.
"Thank you,"
she cooed as she slunk by, a shimmering vision of soft blues and pulsing gold.
"Damn."
She flicked her eyes around the edges of my living room.
"Your modern home is interesting."
"Thank you. May I offer you any refreshment after your long journey from Tir na n'Og?"
"Ale, if you have any, would be splendid."
"Coming right up." I shot forward into the kitchen, beckoning her to follow, and grabbed a couple of Newcastles out of the fridge, tucked back behind the cellars. She thanked me as I handed her one, then said,
"There has been much unrest in Tir na n'Og since you slew Angus Og. His confederates finally revealed themselves, and I was forced to spend some small time putting them to rout. They waged a propaganda war, too, if you can believe it."
I nodded. "I can believe it. What sort of nonsense did they spew?"
"Chief among their complaints was my lack of consort,"
Briett snorted.
"As if Bress ever did anything useful or practical in his long life. All he did was sit there and look pretty. He was a pretty man,"
she sighed, and then her face drew down into a tiny frown.
"And a petty man."
Where Bress was concerned, I had nothing to say. I'd killed him, yet here was his widow in my kitchen, spreading a wee bit of shit on his memory and dressed for epic bed sport. I couldn't even manage a noncommittal grunt. There are no etiquette books that cover this particular situation, so I just took a long pull on my beer.
"But you are not petty, are you?"
"It would be rude of me to say yes when you put it like that." She laughed richly at my lame joke, and I finally understood what Chris Matthews meant when he said on national television that he felt a thrill go up his leg. I could think of nothing to do except take another long drink to disguise my reaction.
"No, you are not petty, and you have a sense of humor as well. Bress had none. That is why I think you should be my new consort."
I sprayed a mouthful of beer onto the linoleum.
"Huh? If you think I'm licking that up, you're crazy,"
Oberon said.
"Oh, I'm sorry I must have surprised you,"
Briett said. I put my thumb and index finger together with a couple of centimeters of space between them. "A bit," I admitted.
"I suppose it sounds a bit unusual, but like the Tuatha De Danann, you have found the secret to eternal youth. You are more powerful than Bress ever was, and you have proven yourself the equal, nay, the better, of two of our number. With my imprimatur and aegis, none will dispute your right to rule by my side, and certainly none will dispute whom I choose to take to bed."
Ignoring the dangerous end of her sentence, I focused on the first part. "Forgive me, Briett, but it has never been my ambition to rule over anyone."
"You need not do it, then,"
she said, shrugging off my objection.
"Bress didn't do anything either. It's a figurehead position, but the Fae feel that it needs to be filled."
"I see. And where would I need to be to satisfactorily fill this figurehead position?"
"In Tir na n'Og, of course."
She finally took a sip of the ale she had asked for. "Can I not remain here if there is no ruling for me to do?"
"You will have other duties,"
she purred in that triple voice that turned my insides to jello. "But I rather enjoy this plane. There's so much change and advancement to appreciate, and an abundance of knowledge to absorb.
You can still sample these things as you wish, making brief trips as often as you like to the mortal plane. But there are more stimulating things to experience as my consort than the latest technological toy. There will be embassies to the world's gods, and wonders to behold, and you will visit all the planes on my behalf.
And my initiate? My hound? They cannot go to Tir na n'og.
What? Hey, whoa, this sounds like a bad idea.
We can accommodate, Oberon,
Briett smiled.
Your initiate would be more problematic, as a mortal who would be constantly at risk of falling prey to the more mischievous of the Fae. Tir na n'og would not be kind to her, and I doubt she would survive long. But she has not sacrificed much. She cannot have learned any of our mysteries yet in these few weeks. Pay her for her time, and have done.
It is not so simple. I have given my word she would be trained fully.
Bring her if you must, then. I cannot guarantee her safety.
But you can guarantee mine and Oberon's. Briett shrugged.
There is no need. You are able to take care of yourself.
Yeah, buddy, I know. We'll talk later. To Briett, I said, this is a most generous offer, and yet wholly unexpected. To become the consort of one's own goddess is beyond the scope of any man's ambition. I confess myself unprepared to give you an answer at this moment, for much may depend on my response, and I feel it would be irresponsible of me to provide one without giving all ramifications their due examination.
So formal.
Briett shook her head.
I must have made it seem like a business transaction. You mistake my meaning.
She set her ale down on my kitchen table and stepped close to me. Her hand groped below my belt, but pulled away, disappointed. Briett's face clouded.
What's the matter, Atticus? Do you not find me attractive? Am I not desirable to you?
Oh, great big bears, beam him up, Scotty, now.
It's not that, not that at all, I said, clearing my throat uncomfortably as I reminded Oberon that Briett could hear him. It's just that I'm extremely tired at the moment, exhausted, in fact, and while I can do you any other service, I simply can't do that. Right now, I mean, later would be good, I nodded smiling. Great, in fact. Briett's nose wrinkled. I heard her sniff a couple of times, and then she abruptly stepped back and tore my shirt down the front, revealing the scratches and bruises from my morning's exertions. Briett's face flushed and her eyes bulged as she drank in the evidence of my dalliance with her rival.
I knew it!
She shouted.
You've lain with her! You're the Morrigan's creature!
And that's all the warning I got before she unleashed the flames of her wrath against me in very literal terms. Fire whooshed out from her fingers and palms to char me toasty in my own kitchen. It didn't burn me directly, thanks to my amulet, but it did behave differently than the fallen angel's hellfire. Whereas the hellfire gave me a flash of heat before fizzling impotently, this ball of fire got channeled directly to the cold iron on my chest, where it began to burn painfully, just like the German hex had a couple of days ago. That was a mystery I'd have to ponder later. Right then, I had a friend to protect, skin to heal, and several fires to put out.
Hey, you can't stick it to my man!
Oberon barked. That's why I wanted you behind her. Don't attack yet, I'm okay. I drew Fragorov from its sheath, wincing at the heat in my palms, and pointed it at Briad's throat.
Fragroitu!
I yelled.
No! Release me now!
She shouted back. She struggled to move but could do nothing but twitch, held fast in the blue glow of a spell crafted by her own brethren ages ago.
You're giving me commands? You just tried to fry me, and you want me to obey you now? I'm sorry, that's not how it works. and you're the one who said I was fit to wield this sword.
You said you'd never wield it against me,
she blazed. True, I admitted, but that was before you tried to kill me. Her eyes shifted to find Oberon.
Release me now, or...
She stopped as I pressed Fraggaraw to the hollow of her throat.
Understand me, Briett. If you ever hurt Oberon, your very long life will end directly afterward. You know I can move between the planes as I wish. There is no place you can run that I cannot follow.
You dare threaten me, a guest in your home?
You tossed out all the rules when you lost your temper. So we're going to have a nice, long talk. You and I and Fraggaraw will make sure you are not deceitful.
Atticus, the cabinets are on fire behind you.
Thanks, buddy. Please take a moment first to put out the fires you started.
Why shouldn't I let the whole house burn?
Because that would be rude when it's a simple matter for you to put them out. Please put them out so we may talk peaceably.
Peaceably?
Briett sneered.
With a sword at my neck?
Touché. But this would not be necessary had you acted with restraint. I ask you politely once more. Will you put out the fires?
What's next? Torture, if I refuse?
No, I'm not the Inquisition. I will find other means to put them out if you will not. Fraggaraw could not compel her to act. It could only compel answers. I had a fire extinguisher in the garage, and I'd have to drag her there and back if she didn't agree. The goddess of fire grimaced, but focused on something behind me and growled in Irish,
Muhim.
Then she focused on me and said,
It is done.
Is it done? I asked Oberon.
Yep, she snuffed him.
Of course I did,
Briett said, reminding us that she could hear Oberon. Thank you, I nodded, as smoke roiled near the ceiling. Let's be seated, shall we? I moved the sword slowly, allowing Briett to shuffle in an undignified way to a chair at the kitchen table, then lowered it by degrees until she was able to sit down. I took a seat across from her, moving her ale out of the way. Excellent. Now, let's review what happened here, shall we? You showed up uninvited, and I welcomed you in. I offered you refreshment, and you accepted. You made a proposal to me, and I said I would think about it. You ripped off my shirt, and then tried to kill me. Now, I ask you, which part of that sequence of events breaks every law of hospitality known to our race?
You left out the part where you fornicated with the Morrigan.
Not while you were here. Answer my question. Sullenly, Briett said,
The part where I ripped off your shirt was a... Minor breach of hospitality.
We are making excellent progress, I enthused. How about the part where you tried to kill me? Was that not also poor conduct for a guest?
Yes, strictly speaking.
But you gave me cause.
No, Briett, I did not. If I had agreed to be your consort first, and then fornicated with the Morrigan in front of you, with Def Leppard on the stereo, then that would have been cause to incinerate me on the spot. But I am a free man, and I gave you no such cause. And beyond that, I cannot fathom why you'd react like a jilted high school girl. This wasn't done out of jealousy, was it?
No,
Briett said.
I was not motivated by jealousy.
I thought not. And did you propose that I become your consort out of any true affection for me?
No.
Of course not. Before we get to the real reason you asked me to be your consort, I would like to address your accusation. If I were truly the Morrigan's creature, as you put it, then I could have killed you already, and indeed I should have and would have. We would not be talking right now if I were beholden to her will, or if I were part of some evil plot to usurp you.
Then what is between you?
Briett asked. She regenerated my ear for me, I said, flicking the lobe. Sex magic. Briett flinched.
I did not know you had lost it. No one told me.
Yep.
I lost it in the Superstition Mountains when I was killing Angus Oak for you. Speaking of which, did you tell Flitish to kidnap Oberon to make sure I showed up? The goddess sighed.
Yes.
Grr. You know, you're not as nice as I originally thought.
I couldn't agree more, Oberon, I said. Briet, I want you to think a moment about what you have done here. I am the last man on this plane who worships you in the old way. I gave you full rights on Samain just a few nights ago.
Yes, but you gave them to the Morrigan, too.
As I should, and to Ogma, and to Mananon MacLear, and all the rest, for they are my gods as you are. And now, to be served thus, after millennia of faith in your goodness and beauty and purity of spirit. And for what? Let's have that answer now. Why did you truly want me to be your consort?
I want the secret of your amulet. I can study it better in Tir na n'Og.
Is that your sole motivation?
No. It would thwart the Morrigan.
Thwart her how? That's more important to you, isn't it?
Yes. She wishes to be supreme in Tir na n'Og, and she is using you to make it happen.
You are no better, I pointed out. You wish to be supreme, and you would use me the same way. I'm disgusted with you both. And you know what really chaps my hide here?
Testify!
It's that you've come down so dramatically from your pedestal. I can't even have a proper crisis of faith and vacillate between the image of perfection and my shattered illusions, because you've left no doubt that there is nothing divine about your nature. Do you not see how you have debased yourself? Or do you persist in thinking that you acted justly in trying to kill me? Wait, don't answer that yet. An inconsistency demanded resolution. Why did you try to kill me with fire? Briet shrugged.
Usually it gets the job done.
This admission, made under a spell that brooked no deceit, told me that Briet still knew nothing about my deal with the Morrigan, or she wouldn't have even tried to kill me. Regardless, it was perplexing behavior. But you expressly knew that my amulet protects me from most magic, I said. Did you forget that?
No, I just didn't think it would prove strong enough to stand against me.
Ah, you thought your magic was stronger than mine.
Yes.
When mortals take excessive pride in their abilities, it's called hubris. I don't think there's a word for when immortals do the same. She regarded me stonily, unrepentant. So, what will you do when I release you from Fragora? She really didn't want to answer this one, and I had to wait until the spell forced her to comply.
I will tear the amulet from your neck and then set you on fire once you are unprotected.
What? Where's the gravy?
I sighed. She wouldn't be able to tear the amulet from me, but that didn't matter as much as her stated intentions. Well, that puts us in a very awkward position, doesn't it? I'd rather that both of us lived and found some way to part amicably. Tell me, Briet, why do you feel I deserve to die?
I still think you're the Morrigan's man, and you humiliated me.
I'm not the Morrigan's anything. I am my own man. And any humiliation you feel is justly deserved, because you have behaved inexcusably. We've already established that it was your actions, not mine, that breached hospitality. You're behaving like a petulant child and not taking responsibility for your actions, like one of the blasted Olympians. And I would like to point out that you have not suffered publicly. No one knows what you have done. It can remain our secret, and I think that this is a breach we can mend. What say you? Are you willing to negotiate a peace, or are you resolved that I must die for imagined offenses?
Release me, and I will negotiate with you.
I laughed at her. I wasn't born yesterday, as the people here are fond of saying. For perhaps a short time you will negotiate. After that, you will try to kill me, correct? Briet gritted her teeth, frustrated that I had seen through her truth so easily.
Yes,
she admitted, after trying in vain to resist answering. I thought as much. So, you see, I must keep you under the spell to ensure you negotiate in good faith.
I have no such assurance from you.
Well, I haven't killed you yet when you've given me ample cause. I've never broken hospitality with you, and I've remained faithful to you for over 2,000 years. I don't think you should be questioning my moral character right now. You cannot say any of those things to me. You have behaved rashly, even stupidly, Briett, because you fear the Morrigan is out to get you, and if I had behaved with the same lack of restraint, you'd be dead and the Morrigan would already be first among the Fae. And it can still turn out that way. I leaned forward and pointed at her with my free hand. You have wronged me, Briett, and you owe me an apology. Much depends on your answer. What say you?
An apology wrung from me at the point of a sword would be worthless.
I beg to differ. At the point of this particular sword, it would have to be heartfelt, or else you wouldn't be able to say it. So, this is a fundamental test of your constitution. Can you admit that you were wrong? Most deities can't. It's simply impossible for them. But you were human once, before we Irish made you gods. Take your time and think about it. Briett's eyes flashed with a blue flame, and I wondered if she had learned to do that just so she could compete with the Morrigan's red flashes. Maybe I should try to figure out how to make my eyes flash green so I could freak out the baristas at Starbucks.
No, you foolish mortal, I'd say as my eyes glowed. I ordered a non-fat latte.
The goddess broke eye contact and focused on emptiness, pressing her lips together, her jaw muscles visibly flexing. She clenched her fists, and her entire body began to smoke, with isolated flames erupting here and there on her skin. I assumed she was dealing with anger issues. Keep quiet while she's doing this, okay? She's forgotten you're there, and I don't want to remind her. Oberon nodded that he heard and understood. At length, the fires went out and she relaxed, her muscles unclenching and the tension sloughing off her shoulders. She took several deep, shuddering breaths, but eventually sighed deeply, placed her hands flat on the table, and looked down at her lap.
Shion, I have breached hospitality with you in an egregious manner. Please accept my sincerest apologies for my behavior.
Fairly spoken, Briett. I accept your apology. But let us discuss the future now. If I release you from Fragoroth's spell, will you attempt to harm me or my hound?
No, nor will I ever seek vengeance for the humiliation I have suffered. However, I cannot promise we will never come into conflict over other matters.
That's understandable, but perhaps we could avoid unpleasantness by discussing other matters now. What do you think might bring us into conflict in the future?
Any liaison you have with the Morrigan.
Why? Should I not be able to liaise with whomever I wish?
Couple with her all you like, Briett sneered, though I suspect there is more pain than pleasure in the act.
She jerked her chin significantly at the scratches on my torso.
What I mean is any sort of alliance that will threaten my position in Tir na n'Og.
All right, explain to me what it is you fear. You think I might help the Morrigan usurp you?
Yes, that is precisely what I think.
Well, I freely tell you that I do not want that to happen any more than you do. I'd much rather have you running things than her.
Thank you,
Briett said warily, after a pause to judge my sincerity. But I feel it only fair to tell you that I have sworn to teach the Morrigan and no other the secret of my amulet. Briett's eyes flared blue.
That is what I'm talking about. With that as her defense, she could slay me easily.
Relax. You have plenty of time to make your own. The Morrigan will not be making one of these overnight. It takes centuries.
and while I feel at this time that I must turn down your generous offer of becoming your consort, you are still welcome to come here and study the amulet whenever you wish.
What did she promise you in return for teaching her about the amulet?
Nothing that need concern you. It has nothing to do with supplanting your position.
Be careful, Druid. She is treacherous.
She has been more straightforward with me than you have, Briot, and she has taken an interest in my life for the vast majority of it. It is no wonder that she has beaten you to discovering this new druidry of mine. You, on the other hand, have ignored me until just recently, now that I have something you want. So, if you find yourself at a disadvantage, you have no one to blame except yourself. Briot closed her eyes and took a deep breath, determined not to lose her temper again.
Yes, this has been a day for my inadequacies to be made plain. Are you finished?
Just about. Will you agree to leave in peace and inform me in advance of your visits in the future?
Yes.
And my promised reward for killing Angus Ogg? Rather than becoming your consort, I would like your forgiveness for today. I released her from Fragora and lowered the sword to the table, but kept my hand on the hilt. I look forward to your next visit, and hope it will be much more congenial than this one.
I shall not break hospitality again,
Briot said as she rose to her feet.
But neither shall you hear again an offer like you heard today. All of this,
she cupped her breast briefly,
could have been yours, Druid, but no more. Think on that the next time the Morrigan is gouging out pieces of your flesh.
She made sure I saw plenty of what I'd be missing on her way out the door.
Damn, damn, damn.
Can I talk now?
Sure, Oberon. What's up?
Usually, I think your paranoia is really funny. But right now, I'm just glad you told me where to stand so that I didn't get set on fire by she of the violent mood swings.
He reared up and put both his paws on my shoulders and gave me a sloppy lick in the face.
Thanks, Atticus.
Chapter 15. There were multiple missed calls on my cell phone. Some were from Granuel, some from Melina, and a couple from Hal Hawk, my lawyer. I called my lawyer first.
Atticus, tell me you weren't involved in this Saturn Massacre business,
he said without preamble. Saturn Massacre?
That's what the papers are calling it, capital M.
Oh, well, look, why don't you come over? I said, because anyone could be listening.
Gods of light and darkness preserve us. Don't move, I'll be right there,
he growled, and then hung up. Granuel was next.
Are you all right?
She asked. I'm afraid you'll have to define your terms.
You're still in one piece and everything still works?
Then, yes, I'm all right.
Good. Thought you'd like to know that priest and rabbi came in again.
They did? I frowned. What did they want?
They asked me to open the rare bookcase. I told them I couldn't.
Right, because you can't.
Right. They looked pretty pissed. And then they asked all these questions about you. Religious stuff, like whether you were a Christian or a Jew or a pagan, and whether you practiced your religion faithfully.
What did you tell them?
I said those were questions better answered by yourself. They wanted to know when you'd be back, and I had to tell them I really didn't know.
Well, hopefully I'll be back before the day is through. Can Perry and Rebecca run things tomorrow?
Sure. What do you want me to do?
Latin, of course. And get your job back at Rue Labula.
Already got it. All it took was a phone call and some groveling to Liam.
Excellent. I want you to come over in the morning so I can see about doing something for your personal protection. I haven't done a divination recently, but I'm getting one of those hunches.
The paranoid kind?
What other kind is there? Hey, I said, my voice dropping and lilting with dulcet honey-bunny tones.
Can I tell you one of the many reasons I love you?
This wasn't an abrupt flowering of love between us. It was a code phrase, one that Granuelle herself had suggested.
"Look, Sensei,"
she'd said upon her return from North Carolina,